Hello, everyone. My name is Phil Blancato. I am CEO and President of Latimer Thalmann Asset Management. Welcome to August the 12th. The summer is moving right along. We are in the midst of the summer doldrums, that time of the year when the wind usually is supposed to be calm, right? That's what they call the doldrums, where the ships are normally in areas of the world near the equator, and the wind isn't strong enough to move them along. I learned that term recently. Meaning otherwise, the markets are usually fairly quiet this time of year because folks are on vacation and less things are happening. This year might be a little bit different. When we look at most recent economic data, as we do from week to week when we talk about these calls, we look at the latest on the virus. It seems like it's ever evolving in a way that is very much unprecedented. On the virus front, we are closing in on 21 million confirmed cases and over 750,000 deaths globally. This week alone, the active case count stands at 6.3 million. There have been 14,213,000 cases with an outcome. Of those, 746,000 folks have tragically passed away. 13.4 million have recovered. The current most serious rate now stands at 1% of total cases, or roughly 60,000 people. The overall fatality rate has fallen to 3.63%, which was up by as much as 6%. So definitely an improvement in the fatality rate versus the new case rate. When we look at what's going on with cases around the globe, there is a spike in some of the European countries. Spain, believe it or not, has gone from just a few hundred cases a day to days with 3,000, 4,000, as much as 5,000. France has gone in back into the few thousand a day. UK a minor spike. However, good news out of places like Brazil, which seems to have flattened out, granted up as high as 45,000 cases a day, and even Mexico flattening down as well, but not quite bending the curve yet. More importantly, here in the United States, where we were touching 78,000 cases at our high, we've now bent the curve back down, and we're now consistently below 60,000, and we have been actually in the last 3 days consistently below 50,000. So we're starting to see the case rate change, which is good news. From a death standpoint, from a fatality standpoint, we were averaging between 500 to 700 cases a day of folks passing away. And that number spiked to between 700 to 1,200. And yesterday, a terrible day of 1,500. So we're not out of the woods yet, but certainly as of late, the numbers have improved that the big four, Arizona, Texas, and Arizona, have improved significantly. And that's the reason why our new case count is coming down. When we look across the country, and we care so much about ICU beds, as of right now, there's only one state with an ICU situation above 80%, and that's Alabama. It's worth noting that hospital ICU utilization is normally between 60 to 70%. And when you look at places like Georgia, which right now sits at 78%, only a few percent, 2% higher than its normal average of this time last year. In almost every situation, except for maybe in Mississippi, which is up at about 74% and normally at 64%, everybody is in actually very good shape from an ICU standpoint. And in fact, although our death rate has gone up, as I mentioned, almost by a double, considering where we are today and where we were, it's nowhere near as bad as when this all began, not but a few months back. So comparatively, right now our average 7-day death count is 1,075. We're back in April at our peak, it was 2,238. Now again, up from the roughly 600 where our average death rate was. And certainly not great that it's increased, but nowhere near as bad as it had become. And comparatively to places like California, which has actually seen a 9% drop in the last week in ICU beds. So a significant improvement in that getting back to somewhat normal of before the spike happened. When you think about places like Arizona, which have had a profound improvement. Arizona had 5,500 new cases a day on June 29th, now back down to 809 cases a day. They have had a 37% usage of their ICU capacity, which was up as high as 55%, so almost a 20% improvement on ICU capacity. 510 of the people of the 1,400-bed hospital system are now due to COVID, and the number is coming down rapidly. Florida. Back on July the 15th, had an average new case count of 14,000 a day, now down to 7,600. Deaths were as high as 166 on average on July 16th, now down to 99. And ICU beds have also dropped by 13%. So an improvement in Florida. Texas is mostly unchanged, except what they have seen is an improvement in their ICU beds, down from 37% to 32% ICU beds. Of their total ICU beds, of that 37% were COVID. Now they're only 32, so they've dropped by 5%. Their ICU bed capacity, believe it or not, is about the same because folks are getting elective surgeries again. The only one piece of bad news out of these states was that Texas positivity rate jumped up to 24% from 17. So even though the new case count is down, they're still seeing positive tests come out of the state. So that's something to keep an eye on. But everything else, by and large, looks excellent. That's wonderful news. When you think about what's happening, the cases that were spiking were in states with large GDP additions, meaning they were very accretive to the growth of the country. Where there's now a spike in smaller states, simply because of a migration of folks. You know, we don't have any borders in our state, so you go from one state to another. Folks in Florida jumped up to Mississippi and Alabama and Louisiana, creating a spike there. Folks in Texas went up to Oklahoma and Arkansas, creating a bit of a spike there. Nevada into Northern California and Washington. So as folks moved around, in some cases avoiding the virus, they actually spread the virus. But so far, not a significant spike. And what's important here is these are states that are less accretive to GDP, where states like Florida and California are more accretive, meaning adding more to it. So as of late, even though we're seeing a spike in some other states that is very small as of now, those are states that don't have a big impact on our growth, which is very good news for our economics and our reopening process. As of now, 94% of folks that have passed away continue to be above the age of 85. And as we go through the school opening process, we're finding very clearly that the reality is, whilst kids can get this disease, it's not fatal. So this lumpy approach to opening up schools, my own daughters go to high school and they're going to be in school 3 half-days a week, limiting the class size, controlling the days they're in and out, studying from different parts of the school or at home. This idea of using a common sense approach to school management has had a profound impact in places like Europe. When we look at Denmark, Sweden, Finland, Spain, France, Greece, so far, there's only very little anecdotal proof that the schools being open, and they have been open for some time now, are creating a problem. In fact, in most countries, the new case count and the death rate continues to stay amazingly low. While Spain has had a spike in new cases, their death rate is still basically zero per day, or just a handful of folks. And schools are not transmitting it. So as schools are of very large economic impact, you probably saw how the Big Ten Football Conference and the Pac-12 postponed football for the year. That's hundreds of billions of dollars being left aside that are not going to be made. Not hundreds of billions, but hundreds of millions of dollars, will be not made this year from the economic impact of football and how it contributes to so much other school activities. But at the same token, there's a concern about keeping kids safe. So this narrative and how it impacts the economy and children is something we're going to watch very closely as we go into the fall, because of right now, Europe has seemed to be figuring out a way to do it. And while our statistics aren't as good as Europe's, and that's a good reason not to open some of these schools up, we seem to be getting better as of late. So hopefully that's a positive sign that as we turn things on, we'll maybe be able to do so in a way that's less impactful to the folks that are most vulnerable. Because in the end, what we're realizing is so far, this still is really all about helping folks that are older. As I mentioned, though, the death rates among older people is significantly higher, 8 to 10 times higher than folks that are under the age of 55 years old. And that clearly is a difference maker in how we go about this process. When you think about places like Europe with their low rates, what we're actually seeing is the mobility, how much they move around, believe it or not, is only down about 5% from January to now, meaning they are as active today as they were back in January pre-COVID. Now they're not completely back, but well on their way back. So that's something to think about as we go through this process, because the U.S. GDP for the second quarter was down 9% on an annualized basis, over 32%. That's a significant number. Europe, for the same period of time was down 12%. And for the year, Europe will probably be down north of 40%. But as of right now, because they're able to reopen, as well as some of the Asian markets, they're seeing great economic success. In forecast for now for Europe, talking about growth next year of 7.4%, whereas growth in the United States should be 6.2. Both excellent numbers, but the United States falling behind a bit from a European forecast simply because they're ahead of us on the reopening standpoint. So something to think about as we go through this. Can we open up safely in a way that allows us to get the economy running again? At the same token, not have us fall behind on a global basis to where everyone else is in the world, because it is important that we get our economy turned on for the reasons of, do we want China, who's expected to have an 8% growth rate next year, get further ahead than us and some maybe become a challenge to our global superpower of being the number one economy in the world? It does matter. It does matter about our economy and whether or not we're able to sustain that, because it allows us to not only control the growth of our economy, but the growth of other economies as well. Meaning the ability of the U.S. dollar to be the number one currency in the world still matters a whole heck of a lot. On the economic front, recent economic data has been actually quite good. When you think about the unemployment market, the driver of our economy, what we're seeing as of late is there really is excellent data that's coming in from the unemployment market, meaning we are really adding people back on a fairly rapid basis. Last week, the unemployment market showed a 1.76 million jobs added in the prior month, and we're expecting 1.4 million. The actual unemployment market fell to 10.2%, which, by the way, is the worst it ever got under the Great Recession of 2008. So we still have a long way to go. And we have lost, of all the jobs lost, we've recovered about 40%. There's still roughly 13 million people looking for work. It's still a terrible number. But we had a big win in this last labor market in that folks with the lower wage for people made up the bulk of the gains. 500,000 plus jobs in restaurant, 250,000 plus jobs in retailers. That means people who are really struggling to make ends meet or relying on government aid are finally going back to work. Hopefully doing it in a safe way, and we're starting to see the new case count come down, so I guess we're doing that. You know, it all comes down to wearing masks, and we'll talk about that in just a minute here. But that was a big win from the data standpoint. Another win is we've seen new job openings climb all the way almost 6 million. That's a number that's reminiscent of before the crisis, job openings and available. Initial jobless claims came down to 1.1 million. That number was 6 million at its height. By the way, it's still double the worst of 2008, but definitely 20 straight weeks of improvement, so something exciting there. Earnings, we were expecting corporate earnings to be down as much as 30% in the second quarter, and it looks like they're only going to be down around 9.5 to 10. Also an excellent number considering how bad things got. In fact, when you look at the tech sector, which has been the real driver of the stock market here, it continues to show strength. The top five companies in the tech sector, believe it or not, haven't lost any money year to date. They're actually up. The other 495 companies in the S&P, and especially even smaller companies, are down as much as 80% in revenue, anywhere from 20 to 80 in total. So much more difficult time succeeding. But it is those big tech names that have held us up here, and it is the reality of the support of the Federal Reserve and the federal government have been able to support the markets. But truth be told, the underlying economic continues to get better. When you look at our service sector of our economy, we hit on a scale of call it 20 to 60, or anything above 50 being expansion. We hit 58 in our services sector. And in fact, new orders increased 67. That's a wider scale. I know it's a little bit confusing, but in economic terms, that's one heck of a number. The most important part of our economy, the service sector, expanded quite rapidly in the month of July. That tells us that there really is strength in the underlying economy. Even our manufacturing sector regained its momentum and is now in expansion territory, and new orders are up as well. So that means that not only are we opening up, but we're having success doing it, which is actually translating into a bit of inflation. We're seeing inflation come in quite higher than expected. Month over month, it was up 0.6%, which means headline inflation could be up as much as 1% year over year. Now, many of us grew up with inflation north of 4 and 5%, so 1% sounds like a bargain. But the reality is we need some inflation. Low inflation means that the economy is heating up and there's a chance for things to get better from the idea of things, yes, getting more expensive, but making more money and seeing growth. The Federal Reserve is committed to letting inflation run a bit higher, north of 2 or even 3%, before they start to raise interest rates again. So that's exciting news that we're seeing some positive moves in inflation and even producer prices. How much companies are charging for goods is also up about 0.6 month over month. So even in the core market, which excludes food and energy, was up 0.6. That's an extremely positive sign, show that there is healing in the overall economy and it's happening perhaps faster than we expected. When I look at small business optimism, now it fell a bit from 100.6 to 98.8, and that's again a scale of called 70 to 110. But the highest we ever had pre-pandemic was 104.5. So small businesses are continuing to show optimism. That's an extremely important point, because as we go through this, small business is the engine that drives success in the United States. They are really at the core of what we do, something we desperately have to get people back to work and create revenue. And you're starting to see some optimism there. And it could partially be because of the work that the federal government has done. As you know, there was a protection program for states, municipalities, people who lost their job, and small businesses. As of late, the Senate and Congress can't seem to come to a resolution on what the next round of stimulus will be. We do need one more because we're not there yet from a overall vaccine or antivirus, and we're not fully open yet. We're getting there. Won't be as big as the first one, but certainly the Federal Reserve, which got us to this point, buying us a bridge to the other side of the virus, it's worked very well, and the stock market has held up. The economy's held up because of it. The federal government, with supporting people, has also created spending. Believe it or not, our year-over-year retail sales are only down about 10%. People are spending money online and now in their local community. We're seeing spending increase quite significantly. The latest round shows an additional $400 of weekly unemployment benefits paid by the federal government, partially by the states, but funded by the government, so really all coming from the government. Evictions, while they're not being extended from a moratorium standpoint, they are going to provide money through the HUD to allow people who are under stress to access capital. A payroll tax cut to fund more money in workers' pockets, and extending student loans so that folks don't have to pay them back and have an opportunity to continue to survive if they've lost their job. Now, that's not law yet, but certainly it's something the president has put out there with the hopes that it'll get passed to create some round of stimulus, since it can't seem to get through the House and the Senate. It seems that we're divided on how much to spend, and it's understandable considering how much money we've spent over the last few months here. Trillions of dollars, $3 trillion on our way to $4 trillion, maybe even more. However, when you look at economic activity, certainly the spread of the virus matters. Understanding, can we open up and how do we do it? There's really a six-step method to think about when it comes to this. First, social distancing is proving to work, not just here, but globally as well. Arizona, Texas, California, Florida, all have had success in bending the curve because of the social distancing they put in. The mask wearing, that you are, out of a study from Japan, 19 times more likely to get the disease indoors than outdoors. And by wearing a mask, you significantly reduce your chance of getting it. In the United States now, 80% of the country has a mask mandate, and that has worked. Whereas in Europe, there's been a mandate for some time now. It's worked for them, and it is working for us. Wearing a mask makes a difference. It helps eliminate the tiny droplets that go into the air or a chance of you breathing them in. The reason why we saw a spike in the Sun Belt is because when the hot weather drove people inside, they caught the virus. So that's the reason why now that the bulk of the country is wearing masks and avoiding that up the chance to get it, by being outdoors or indoors with a mask, it has made a difference. Super spreaders are another component of it. Tracking down that 10% of the people who get the disease infect 80% of everyone else. We know that because now we can do large pool testing. There's a new testing system from a company called Sorrento. It's an at-home test with a 97 to 99% accuracy that you use your saliva. It changes colors to let you know if you have it or don't within 30 minutes. The key is finding folks that have the disease, because what we can tell so far is you really only spread it within the day 3 to day 5. Those are your super spreader moments. If we can test in either pool testing, large folks at one time to find the super spreader, or do it at home, that'll bring down the chance of spreading the virus significantly and that much more bend the curve. The virus does spread, you know, with folks who are generally in that 5-day range. So mandating a quarantine for those who do get it in those first few days is critical. And then finally, we know that we need to protect older folks. We've seen a spike in nursing homes deaths in places like Florida, Arizona, and Texas. Many of the deaths that are passing away in those states are in nursing homes. Now, they're nowhere near where they were, but there are something to consider, that if it is the older folks that are getting sick here, what can we do to help them? And that's got to be part of the narrative as we continue to open up here, now that we know the data and what's behind it. When you put all this together, it comes down to that the economy is showing strength. We are seeing real success here. But it does bear notice that the stock market's somewhat unusual. Of the total stock market game, and after today, we are near close to all-time high. Believe it or not, the top two stocks in the S&P 500, Amazon and Apple, have enough return to make up for the next 10. Those top 12 make up for more than 80% of the return of the S&P 500. Amazon alone has added 2.5% to this year's total return. Apple over 2%. Microsoft over 1.5%. Facebook almost 1%. So it's a very top-heavy market. Think of it this way. Industrial stocks are down 8% in total. Banks down 20%. Energy stocks down 30%. And the top 10 stocks are up anywhere from Amazon, for example, is up 42% on the year. Apple 33%. Microsoft 9%. Facebook 18%. Netflix 21%. So what you're seeing is a very top-heavy market. Now, recently, that's broadening out. We're seeing more names be successful. And that's because as we come out of this recession, it stands to reason that we will get better economic success as the broader economy does better and not just focused on the stay-at-home corona stocks or the names that are keeping the economy running. And therein lies the secret to success, but in your portfolios, why you want to continue to be diversified. So better economic data for sure, a broadening out, a path to opening like we found in Europe or following Europe to a great degree. Hopefully we can manage this as the schools come back in session here and not create a situation. Georgia, for example, to their credit, has had a spike in a school. They found out who has it. They're keeping them home. They're letting the teachers quarantine and then finding a way to get the other kids back to school because school, as we all know, is critically important from learning socially as well as just pure learning and as well as economically. Let's switch over to the vaccine for a minute and the antiviruses. Just some good news there. Merck is beginning a phase 2 trial. They're going to have a single dose shot rather than one plus a booster. Big company, Merck. We hope they have some success there. Gamaleya Institute is the drug out of Russia, Moscow. They claim they have the vaccine. Now, they haven't finished phase 3 trials, yet they're claiming they have it, which is very unusual. They're calling it Sputnik 5. You remember the Sputnik rocket that beat the United States to space? Well, I guess they want to beat the United States to the vaccine. Except this time, it doesn't seem like they've tested enough, so more to come on that. But certainly, that's the first vaccine globally that is suggesting they've got it licked. Chinese firms. CanSino has struck a phase 3 trial with 5,000 volunteers in Saudi Arabia. Sinopharm, a phase 3 trial with folks in Bahrain, 6,000 people. Sinovac has released their latest round of testing on 1,600 people with very positive results. Not clear data, but something to be said there. Moderna, a U.S.-based company, struck a deal for 100 million doses of their vaccine that can be ready by the fall. The United States government is paying $1.5 billion for that. Their vaccine is in phase 3, and we should get results by September. Inovio produced results today saying that their vaccine is mostly working. Their stock got beat up for it, but they should have more data by early September. Johnson & Johnson, coming out from behind, is actually in phase 1 beginning phase 2 trials, and they are committed to creating, get this, 1 billion doses by the end of this year. They are so convinced they've got this figured out, they're willing to backstop their claim with, they started with 200 million, then they added another 100 million. Now they're going to have a billion by the end of this year. That's pretty impressive considering they're not even phase 3 yet. So something to be thought about with Johnson & Johnson. They are a big company with the manufacturing prowess to do it. I mentioned Sorrento already with their testing. That's exciting. Gilead, remember, that's a drug that's working. It's part of the reason why our fatality rate is falling is because it's a drug that gets people out of the hospital and working very well. Regeneron is a name I care deeply for. They announced today it's a therapeutic. It's not a vaccine. It's something that simply gets you better. They will have results of their antibody cocktail by September. Folks, this is a big one. This is one I think we can very much look forward to, that if this cocktail works, it brings the pressure off the hospital systems, it gets people better, our death rate goes down to next to nothing, and suddenly we've got the window of time we need to get to the vaccine. Just like Eli Lilly. Remember last week we talked about Eli Lilly as a therapeutic as well. They should also give results by September. There are nursing homes already inoculating people. To me, that's very exciting that we've got something that could work to get people better right away. And by the way, I have a very good friend that actually has come down with COVID down in southern Georgia. And believe it or not, his doctor prescribed hydroxychloroquine and the Z-Pack. He said of every case he's gotten with COVID, he's prescribed this, the doctor now speaking, and has worked very, very well. So that one's a bit of a political football. But it's so far, according to my friend, working and getting him better, and he's had almost no symptoms from all this. So really pretty exciting. Some other fun headlines that I've seen, because we are making great success on the vaccine front, and we would expect something to fall come to light very soon here. Robots now delivering food in your hotel or any other goods you need. So rather than interact with a person, robots are going to be the delivery source of choice to get things better. As schools reopen, Big Brother's making their way in. There are a number of companies like Raptor Technologies and Volin that are retrofitting schools with cameras that can not only judge movement, contact tracing, check to see who's wearing a mask, but also check temperature. Imagine the poor kid is trying to sneak out and go to the bathroom and meet one of his buddies. That's not going to be allowed anymore. All kidding aside, we are making schools highly supervised to be able to limit this. Now, I'm a little bit concerned about privacy, to be honest with you, but there is clearly a very aggressive approach being made to keep schools safe, and it's through technology and at that using new types of machine learning to be able to track students to see if they can limit the spread. Hopefully, then that stuff goes away once we're back to normal, but I guess that's a debate for another day. In universities, talking about giving students ultraviolet lights in their room so that they can wave off their clothing. Ultraviolet light kills the virus. Wave off their clothing or friends when they come visit. Having packs of, in case you've got to be sequestered in your room, packs of food ready to roll, and having some common sense in the idea of wearing a mask, and more importantly, creating a scenario where you're taking lots of vitamin D and avoiding Tylenol and things like that, which can help weaken your immune system. All kinds of different ideas these days, I guess, to avoid getting the virus, and perhaps that's why it's working to a great degree. When you wrap it all up, it's been an interesting week. No doubt about it that we're at a time period where we are, had enough of this thing, to be quite honest with you. We'd like to see the dark days be behind us. But if you look back at history, this isn't the first time. Remember the Spanish flu of 1918 that killed millions of people. And right there we had a world war with it that impacted, somewhere between 50 to 100 million people globally, either casualties of war or sickened from it. But yet right after 1918, what happened? The Roaring Twenties, one of the greatest booms in American history. So a dark time became replaced by a much better time. If you think about the next time that happened in 1949, in the 1920s, the stock market boom, which led to the Great Depression. But then after that, in 1949, we had a polio epidemic where we had over 57,000 cases, 3,200 deaths, and 21,000 people experienced paralysis. It was a terrible time. But what happened right after that? And once the crisis was passed, we found oil, our steel mills exploded, we grew at a rapid clip, and the American age of capitalism took place. 1957 to 1958, H2N2 pandemic. I think that was called the Hong Kong flu. 1.1 million deaths worldwide. 20 million Americans were affected. 116,000 passed away. But that was also followed by a great boom. During the 1960s, real GDP averaged 5%. Growth was as high as 8.5%. Payroll surged over 32%. The great American economic revival was in place. So we've seen this narrative before. Whether it was the women's right to vote that came out of the 20s or the civil rights movement of the 60s, breakthroughs have happened. We've had success. I think this is dark days, but with the Federal Reserve coming in and giving companies the support and people the support they need to sustain themselves, with the federal government giving out aid, with the data from the second quarter not being as bad as we expected, with the chance that we're actually growing economically really pretty robustly, you see that in the unemployment and the manufacturing and services sector, things may be getting better. We know where the virus is. We know who's getting it. We know how to bend the curve again for the second time. And then more importantly, there is medicine I still believe wins. Regeneron, Eli Lilly, keep an eye on those names. Beyond that, some of the big vaccine manufacturers coming to market. We're all in this together, and it's showing through here. So while the stock market is very expensive, I still think you want to be conservative in your portfolios. You want to participate in the equity markets, but you don't want to make big bets here because the stock market has fully anticipated a vaccine and it's fully anticipated the market turning back on. That just hasn't happened yet. So for that reason, I think you still want to be somewhat cautious. Protect your portfolio, but participate in this rally. As far as the rest of the year goes, as we get closer to the beginning of the fourth quarter in this wild election season, that's what we're going to be talking a lot about. One, when do we get a vaccine? Two, what happens with the election? 3, what's going on between the United States and China? Do we get into another tariff battle? And 4, do we get some antitrust lawsuits coming out of Google, which is quite a big deal because what could that do for other tech companies as well? Always something to worry about the markets. Always something to watch. The markets climb the wall of worry like they've done again. And as of today, we are probably just about, maybe right there, the all-time high in the S&P 500 ever. So even though the markets are at all-time highs, still things to watch, still things to monitor. And for that reason, I'll speak to you again next week. I look forward to giving you some more updates. I hope you're safe and sound wherever you are, and I hope you're enjoying the summer doldrums. Take care, everybody. Have a wonderful and safe week. Bye-bye.